I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Beam me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, D.A., I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, D.A., what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
D.A., what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, D.A.? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My co-worker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Quicken Loan Studios. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Thanks so much for joining us, everybody. DA with you. What an annihilation by Clemson last night. 44-16, the worst loss in Nick Saban's Alabama career. We've been discussing it all morning long. We'll continue doing so throughout the next 2 hours of the show. We'll also tackle this hour. Green Bay's new head coach, the first team that has hired and filled its vacancy, goes to Matt LaFleur, offensive coordinator for the Tennessee Titans, is now the head coach of Aaron Rodgers, the Green Bay Packers. Joining us here on the DA show now is our good friend, who covers the SEC for the SEC Network, also played the SEC in the late 90s, early 2000s for the Auburn Tigers. That's our friend Cole Kublik. Drop it on by after last night's Clemson demolition of Alabama. Cole, good morning.
Hey, I'm doing good.
I'm doing great, my man. How you doing?
Doing really well.
Let me ask you, last night's big-time win, was it more Nick Saban and his staff getting out-coached or better players, better talent by Clemson?
Oh, no, definitely not better talent. Not across the board, no. The NFL draft will prove that over the next 3 or 4 years. You go guy for guy, position group for position group, and Alabama had more advantages from a talent perspective and an overall player perspective. But this was a masterful game plan that was set in place on both sides of the ball by the Clemson staff. I was very impressed with the different things that they did. Scheming up blitzes, scheming up pressures, rolling in coverages, doing different things from that perspective. Brent Venables did a great job drawing up that defensive plan and I think helping an elite defensive line. He didn't just lean on an elite defensive line and say, all right, boys, get out there and go get them. You know, he didn't just play sick them with that group. He helped them go out and be disruptive, and I think that really led to why that defense was able to do what they did to Alabama. And then I think Tony Elliott and Jeff Scott did an excellent job offensively of helping Trevor Lawrence. The thing that I think a lot of people haven't mentioned about what Trevor Lawrence did last night, first and foremost, the Clemson offensive line deserves to be the MVP of that game because I thought that was a total mismatch, and I thought that Raekwon Davis and Quinnen Williams and Isaiah Bugs would decimate that group last night. But people get a little bit consumed with Trevor Lawrence hit the big throws. He made plays down the field. He's got a big, accurate arm. The thing that Trevor Lawrence did that we need to be talking more about, D.A., he got the ball out on time. You never saw him moving around in the pocket, waiting in the pocket, sort of panicking in the pocket. It was 1-2, get the ball out. And Trevor Lawrence was masterful with that last night, and I think a lot of that was by design, and that's why Jeff Scott and Tony Elliott deserve a lot of credit for how they drew that plan up to take down Alabama.
And the times that Alabama got through that offensive line, he stood there, took a hit, and still delivered on time at a pretty precise route and precise throw. He was amazing last night. Let's go back to the talent thing because the teams that have played Alabama the best recently, Clemson, Georgia, these teams, Ohio State a couple of years ago, these teams have the NFL-style talent. Now, the defensive line of Clemson might have 3 first-rounders in it. Trevor Lawrence could be the number one pick of the NFL drafted a couple of years from now. Do you think that Clemson right now is at an even playing field talent-wise with Alabama or still a step below in terms of their recruiting?
Overall talent, I think they're a little bit behind, but it's really close. I think Georgia's really close. I think Ohio State's extremely close. Listen, there are spots where Clemson is close or ahead. You mentioned quarterback, Travis Etienne at tailback. Now, they don't have the depth that Alabama does at tailback, but he's as good as anybody in the country. He leads the nation with 24 rushing touchdowns now. You look at T. Higgins and Justin Ross and Hunter Renfrow and that group of wide receivers, they're not far off there as well, but they don't have the talent along the offensive line. They don't have the talent in the secondary. I don't think they have the talent at linebacker, but it just goes to show you that you don't necessarily have to just be five-star after five-star after five-star guy to be able to go win a football game. It comes down still to X's and O's. It comes down to scheme. It comes down to matchups. And most importantly, it comes down to execution. And I thought that Alabama coaching staff maybe pressed, maybe even panicked a little bit early in that game when things weren't going the direction that they thought it would. And that just played right into Clemson's hands.
Cole Kublik joins us from the SEC Network discussing last night's big-time win by Clemson. Who takes the blame for the botched fake field goal by Bama?
There's so much blame to go around. I'm going to give it to the kicker, though, for not being the lead blocker that they assigned him to be there. I mean, who the hell thinks a kicker should be your lead blocker on anything? I mean, what do they expect him to do? Was he going to run up at Quinton Williams and knock him out of the A-gap on that play? I mean, I have no idea what the design was, what anybody was thinking, how they felt like that was going to be executed. And then, kind of similar, going back to that Georgia fake punt in the SEC championship game, Clemson's essentially in field goal safe. It's not even an all-out block formation. And Alabama thinks that they're going to be able to pull that off. It was a move of desperation that obviously didn't work, and I think you have to lay the blame on Nick Saban. He's the one that has to greenlight that call there. So the blame shouldn't go anywhere else.
It's a call, it's a play that gets clowned because it looks so bad, but it's also a play that we never see Alabama make. We never see something that looks so goofy and so silly and so obviously not going to work. It makes you wonder just why that would ever be greenlit at that point in time. Do you think that was a declaration of panic from Alabama and Nick Saban at that moment?
Pressing, for sure. Panic, maybe. When you have the offensive capabilities that Alabama had this entire year, I don't know if you necessarily full-out panic at that point in time, but you definitely begin to press. And like you said, we don't see plays like that from Alabama very often. Why is that? Well, they don't need them very often. They haven't needed them very often this season or the last few seasons. So I think when you consider situations that Alabama has been in, they haven't been in a situation like that where they've needed a big play. And by the way, when they did a couple of years ago, they hit the onside kick, Marlon Humphrey recovers it, and they go on to win that game against Clemson in the national championship game. So very rarely does Alabama need a moment like that, need a play like that. And they just happened to draw it up at a bad time against a defense that was prepared to take it on. And I just don't know. I don't even agree with the way the thing was drawn up. So a little bit of desperation, a little bit of panic, absolutely.
Last night, Reese Davis, following the game, said that there's a new reality in college football. Do you believe that after last night?
I don't know if it's new, though, D.A. I mean, the last 4 years, these two teams are 55-4 with two national championships. I'll say that again. Clemson and Alabama are both 55-4 with two national championships. And by the way, two of those four losses for each of those teams came to the other team. So these have been the two dominant teams in college football the last 4 years. These two teams are tier one in college football. And then there's a step down to everybody else. We can talk Oklahoma, Ohio State. We can talk Florida, LSU, Michigan, Texas. Oregon is maybe on the come, but they're all tier two or lower. Make no mistake, there are two teams in tier one of college football right now. It's Alabama and it's Clemson. That has been the reality for the last 4 years. So if there's a new reality, I think it will be that nationally the perception that Clemson can go out and play with anybody on any day needs to be something that we're accustomed to, needs to be something that we have an understanding of, because there's a lot of people like me personally, that did not think Clemson could hang with Alabama last night and thought that they could get embarrassed on that field last night. And turns out Clemson now is the team that can go out and embarrass other great teams on any given night across the landscape of college football. That's the new reality that a lot of us need to deal with.
So why didn't you think that Clemson could hang last night? Why did you think they could get embarrassed? Was it because you believe that the path through to the playoff for Alabama proved more in the SEC than the ACC could ever provide for proving Clemson's greatness?
Yeah, let's just go back and look at the last five Power Five teams that these two teams played. I think Clemson had Boston College, Duke, Pitt, South Carolina, Notre Dame. Alabama had LSU, Mississippi State, Auburn, Georgia, Oklahoma. I think the rankings will tell you, the records will tell you that was a more difficult path that Alabama had. But it's not solely based on that. I went back and I studied the Notre Dame game, and I saw Notre Dame's defensive line give the Clemson offensive line a lot of trouble. Now, they couldn't capitalize on it, again, because Trevor Lawrence knows when to get the ball out. But I felt like the Alabama front and the Alabama secondary was a step up above what Notre Dame's was. I went back to the Pitt game and saw the Pitt defensive line give the Clemson offensive line trouble. And when I saw what Quinnen Williams was a wrecking ball for that Alabama defense this year. I mean, he completely erased opponents' game plans, and I kind of anticipated that he would do the same thing last night. And let's go back and look what Kellen Mond did to this Clemson secondary, what Jake Bentley did to this Clemson secondary. We would all believe that Tua and Jerry Jeudy and Devonta Smith and Irv Smith are a step above what those teams have offensively, especially up front from a protection standpoint with their offensive line. I figured Alabama would be able to move the ball offensively against this Clemson defense. I knew the front four would be difficult and be tough to manage, but I didn't think that the back end would play as well as they did, and I sure as hell didn't think Tua would make the huge mistakes that he made.
Cole Kublick joins us this morning here on the DA Show from the SEC Network discussing last night's game. I also wonder, when it comes to Clemson, if people talk about a sea change or a changing of the guard or a new reality, last night suggested that Clemson is way better than Alabama. That, yes, they could be equals in generalities, but that head-to-head, at least last night, they are way better. Do you feel like that's overblown because of the final score and that they're really just 1 and 1A? Or do you feel like Clemson is ahead of Alabama as a program?
I think right now you have to say that they are because of what they did and how they did it. I mean, that could have been worse last night. I mean, let's not pretend like Clemson tacked on two scores in the last 4 minutes of the game to make this ugly. This thing was ugly in the first quarter.
So, in other words, you don't think that was one bad night for Alabama. You think across the board Clemson's just a better football team.
Right now, yeah. I think you have to feel that way. But make no mistake, Alabama made mistakes. Clemson was going to need Alabama to make mistakes to win that game going in. But I think now, when you re-dissect it, you say, if Alabama doesn't make those mistakes, Clemson probably still wins that football game. They outperformed, they out-executed and out-coached Alabama. So I think a lot of the conversation, when you bring it up the way that you do, is going to circulate around talent. And Alabama still has more talent, but I think Clemson's a better team. And they proved last night that they're a better team. And I think they proved last night that they have a better coaching staff because the plan that they put in – here's the way that game played out in my mind, just the way that it looked. And I know this is not real, but the way the optics of that game last night were Clemson probably knew they could handle Notre Dame. So they spent the majority of the month off preparing for Notre Dame and Alabama. It appeared as though Alabama prepared for Oklahoma. And then after they beat Oklahoma, began preparing for Clemson. Therefore, Clemson seemed to be two steps ahead of everything that Alabama did last night. And I think that, in part, makes them a better football team, yes.
We began the morning talking about this build by Dabo Swinney, and this happened 10 years ago. And Clemson is geographically in a good spot. It is a football school. They value football. Was this a sleeping giant when Dabo took it over, or did Dabo do something nobody else could have done in getting it to this point?
There's no way. I think there are a couple of sleeping giants in college football. And I think Clemson, you have to give credit to the administration for stepping up and giving him everything that he's needed to make it what it is. But I'm not going to sit here and even pretend like there's 10 or 15 or 5 or even 3 other coaches that could have gone in there and done what he's done. I'm not going to believe that. I'm just not. Because I believe that Dabo does it very different than Urban Meyer and Nick Saban and other great, even Jimbo Fisher. He has a different aura. He has a different attitude. He has a different demeanor. He does it in a very different way. So I don't know if a Nick Saban approach or if a Pete Carroll approach would have worked in Clemson, South Carolina. I can't sit here and say that I truly believe that. So was it a bit of a sleeping giant? Yes. But the administration got on board early, and you see what they've done with facilities. You see what they've done around their uniforms and their fans and on social media and through videos and production and recruiting and helping and staff size. They've done everything like a big boy program would do, and that's assisted Dabo Swinney, but he has done it his way, and his way has worked. So I think he deserves the majority of the credit, whether it was a sleeping giant or not, for being able to have the vision, the attitude, the wherewithal to go in and make Clemson what it is today.
Cole Kublick joins us from the SEC Network. I hate to look ahead already, but who's the third best program in America next season?
I think right now you have to say Georgia. And they took some serious losses over the weekend with Mecole Hardman, Riley Ridley, Isaac Nada. and Elijah Holyfield all announcing that they're going to go play in the NFL. And obviously DeAndre Baker, their best corner, announced that before the Sugar Bowl that he wasn't going to play and sat out. He's going to go to the NFL. So that's going to be tough to replace. But I look at the best offensive line in college football going into 2019 is going to be in Athens, Georgia. We saw Jake Fromm carve up Alabama in the SEC championship game. He's going to be back. He'll still have DeAndre Swift behind him. And I think the talent has been recruited there on defense to be able to take that step. So if I had to go number three right now behind Clemson and Alabama, it's going to be the Georgia Bulldogs.
If you're a college football fan, you're not following Cole Kublick already on Twitter, you should absolutely be doing that. That's where you can find him on Twitter, at Cole Kublick. He joins us for the SEC Network. This is awesome, man. It's always been fun to catch up with you throughout the football season. Maybe let's do this as we make our way through signing day, and then we start getting into a little spring football again, all right?
I'd love to do it. We got to have something to offset this break before college football starts again. So anytime you want, I'm in.
I appreciate it, buddy. Thanks so much, Cole.
Thanks, D.A.
You got it. Cole Kublick joining us this morning here on the show for the SEC Network. Excellent analysis, as always, from Cole. When we come back, we'll do a little NFL here. The Packers have found their man, the first head coach hired around the NFL this season. Surprising that the Packers went with a first-time head coach to try to save Aaron Rodgers' prime? D.A., CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
We are the glitch in the simulation.
You know, Aaron Rodgers broke his heart. Hashtag stay away from me, buddy. A video that, you know, I've gone to psychological counseling for.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
The curse of the bird seed continues for the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers. Will it be broken with a new head coach? Welcome back. The Player of the Week brought to you by Granger. Taking a look at the one who got it done this week. It's Trevor Lawrence. Last night, the Clemson quarterback, 20 of 32, 347, three touchdowns. He's a true freshman. Clemson, the first team in the AP poll era dating back to 1936 to finish 15-0. And the first national champion that went undefeated since the playoff began 5 years ago. And yet Trevor Lawrence is still 2 years away from being able to enter the NFL draft, where he would obviously be the number one pick already in the NFL draft, had he been eligible, or would he be eligible coming up in April. The Player of the Week brought to you by Granger. Granger's got your back when it comes to the safety and industrial supplies that keep your facility running. Get what you need when you need it at Granger.com. We'll tackle that question coming up here at the top of the hour. Trevor Lawrence in the NFL draft. How bizarre is it knowing that this kid's still got to play two more seasons despite being everybody's number one draft pick right now if he could come out? Remember that the DA Show has Behind the Scenes available on Instagram. Follow me on Instagram at Damon Amendo, and you'll be able to check out Behind the Scenes stories. And a couple of interesting storylines have popped up over the last 2 days. This morning, Wendy's has dropped off a number of delicious treats for everybody for breakfast. And it is bacon cheeseburgers and bacon and cheese covered French fries. And lemonades. Of course, Mraz partook in all of the above. Some said, I'll do one of the three. Others said two of the three. Mraz said three of the three. So that's a nice big boy breakfast for you.
Technically, there were nuggets, so I didn't go all four. I didn't go to Mount Rushmore. I just
there were nuggets out there.
Yeah, as Pete is basically trying to look for a Canyon of Hero parades because he only had nuggets and not the burger over here.
Puffiness with sodium.
I just said I had nuggets. That's it.
I said the burgers were excellent. He goes, let it be noted, I only had nuggets. Like, woo, okay, great. You had four nuggets. Big health freak over here.
Number two, yesterday this all sews into the fact that Mraz got a brand new T-shirt for Christmas, a Yogi Berra T-shirt from Yogi Berra's museum. And he was going to wear it, got it from his mom for Christmas, wore it yesterday to work. And it's a very cool shirt. It says Yogi across the front, and the G is an 8, Yogi Berra's famous number. The problem is, wow, Mraz is looking at Pete the Body Bilotti wondering.
I didn't notice the G was an 8.
Oh, boy.
I didn't notice that. That's awesome. It was just Yogi written big.
It's your shirt. So anyway, very perceptive young man, this Mraz. This shirt, what size is this shirt?
It's a 2X-er.
It's a 2X.
Yeah, listen, some brands I'm an X, some I'm a 2.
Okay, so this is a 2X-er. You wore it yesterday, and the top half is good. It's big enough. It doesn't pull in your moobs. It's fine. It's baggy enough. But then once it gets below the Buddha belly, it gets real tight. I don't know what it's about, why it's cut this way.
Overpopulation.
But the shirt itself starts grabbing at all of the Buddha belly. And it almost tucked up underneath to make Mraz look like a walking mushroom. It was very interesting. It kind of just tucked itself underneath. And so it showed all of the Buddha belly. And everybody at the office was clowning it yesterday.
My shirt was basically like the plot line to Bird Box. The top half didn't look, the bottom half looked. And it was suffocated.
So I've got some video of this that I'm going to post on the Instagram so you guys can see exactly what we're talking about. But it was the talk, the conversation of the entire newsroom. Everybody here at CBS Sports Radio talking about Mraz's shirt.
I was like Lady Gaga coming out in the egg at the Grammys. Everybody had an opinion.
Miley Cyrus on the wrecking ball.
My favorite quote, right, it was Lady Gaga's meat dress. My favorite quote was Moose saying, "That's a tough spot." That's a tough spot. Like you were backed into a corner or your shirt was backed into a corner. I don't know. But it was a tough spot. So I want to post pictures of this because everybody had a take on Mraz. It was like, exactly like the Grammys or the Golden Globes or the Emmys, it was who wore it best. And it really tucked up underneath. But Mraz has now since retired that until baseball season.
Still baseball. I need to, maybe I should lose a couple more of the holiday weight. But I will tell you, and this is no lie, you put that on the internet and people start clowning me, this will be the moment in the 6 years my mom is devastated at what has happened. Because she always kind of laughs and, oh, they're having a good time poking fun at you. This was like her, like, surprise. I think this shirt's great for you. Christmas gift. And if she finds out people are clowning me for it, this might break her.
So what do? Not post it?
No. Look, you've already teased that you're going to post it. But, like, now I have to, today, when I get home from work, sit her down and say, Mom, I love the shirt. Before you see what's been released on the internet, know that this has nothing to do with me. Those guys are clowns. Do not take offense to this.
What's released on the internet? Like, this is a Star Wars trailer. So let me ask you, will she watch the Instagram stories? If I don't put it on Facebook, she won't see it if it's not on Facebook.
Probably not, though. Bob the Deli Man, for whatever reason, the man doesn't know how to Google or doesn't have an email. He has an Instagram account, so he might show her. But it really just takes him not being lazy for once to make that motion. He's got to move, you know, from the couch to the love seat to show her. That may not happen.
So your dad, Bob the Deli Man, has Instagram.
At Bob the Deli Man, yeah.
All right, well, now I feel bad. I don't want to break your mom's heart. I love your mom.
Look. I'm telling you is this creates more work for me that I have to actually sit her down and let her know that I personally don't hate the shirt because I do not. I like the shirt.
Damage control.
Because this, I saw her when I opened the Christmas gift. It was like that was the one she was waiting for me to open.
It's a great shirt.
Because it wasn't something I asked for. It was like she thought of something on her own. She saw it. She liked it.
It's just cut weird.
Yeah, so.
It's just cut weird. For a 2X, it shouldn't tuck up around the belly.
Just you know, get those abs going and you'll be done for the day.
And unfortunately, Mraz followed up yesterday with a double bacon cheeseburger, bacon cheese fries, and a strawberry lemonade for breakfast.
Was that wrong? Should I have not done that?
It's going to be hard to slither into that real tight-fitting 2X with that as your breakfast.
I will come to his defense for some reason here because a lot of things now, that slim fit thing, it messes up. Like, I normally wear a large, but you get a slim fit large, it might as well be a small, and it doesn't fit you in the correct places. Now, the slim 2XL.
I don't know if that's such a thing.
I mean, I don't know. It might be. Maybe that's what was in play.
Slim cut 2X.
Modern fit. Double XL.
The Yogi Berra Museum?
But I specifically told her, buy me everything slim fit now. So I don't know.
Oh, why would you say that?
Because I look good in slim fit stuff, just not this specific one from the Yogi Museum.
What did your wife say?
My wife, I came home yesterday. And she, I forgot the exact quote. I told you this. Well, what was the quote she gave me? It was basically, you know, she
get away from me.
No, that she didn't want to say anything in front of my mother when I opened it because she knew she would be called out as a hater because she didn't buy the gift.
No. I'm not talking about that. I didn't want to expose your wife. No. I wanted the quote where she looked at you and said, I knew it was going to show off your belly, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. I can't say the actual words she said.
Yeah, right. It was a very, very...
Over dinner last night.
She called his belly a crude word and said...
She said, I knew it was going to show off this quote that a male couldn't even have. And... Yes.
Is it an acronym?
I want yes. Yeah,
exactly. I got
yes.
you. Yeah.
She didn't continue to tap her fork on the plate and keep on moving through dinner.
So Danielle.
She's the best.
Danielle was just trash talking her ass on this shirt during dinner yesterday.
Which dinner?
Yes, and she told me my plate was too piled high.
All right, I never got to the Matt LaFleur segment, so I will get to that coming up next, I promise. The Green Bay Packers hire their new head coach. He's under 40. He's never been a head coach before, and now he's got to save Aaron Rodgers' prime. No pressure, though, Matt. We'll get to that, plus your best audio of the day coming up here next, including Nick Saban licking his wounds after a butt kicking yesterday. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Now get zapped while the sun is out.
Hey, DA.
It was hot TV, my friend. It was hot. It was good.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Happy Tuesday to you, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us. As always, you can check us out across the great CBS Sports Radio Network, but also, how about on SiriusXM Channel 206? You can listen to the rest of the CBS Sports Radio lineup, and of course, the DA Show as well, every single day, 9 until noon Eastern Time, 6 until 9 Pacific, only on CBS Sports Radio and SiriusXM Channel 206.
Oh, okay.
Coming up next hour on the show, we'll look at Trevor Lawrence and whether he's already ready for the NFL draft and how silly it is that he cannot come out to compete in the NFL despite being what everybody would consider the number one pick in the draft. He's only a true freshman. He can't come out until 2020. We'll also discuss these two programs, Clemson and Alabama, maybe passing in the night last night. With only 2 weeks left of the regular season, it's all about the playoff picture in the NFL. So check it out coming up this weekend. Divisional round action on the NFL and on CBS, as we've got two AFC matchups coming up this weekend here on the program, or I should say here on CBS TV. Check it out, the NFL Today, Sunday at 12 Eastern, 9 Pacific, only on CBS. And our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Everyone, there's a quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Need homeowners, renters, motorcycle insurance, too. Get it all, geico.com. Matt LaFleur is the new head coach of the Green Bay Packers. You might be asking yourself, who is Matt LaFleur? I'm glad you asked. He's the offensive coordinator the last year with the Tennessee Titans. Before that, he was a coordinator with the Los Angeles Rams. Before that, he was a quarterback's coach in Washington. And so what do we know about Matt LaFleur? Here's what we know. He is considered the protege of Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan. Shanahan being in Washington with Mike Shanahan, and then as we know, Sean McVay taking over the Rams job. LaFleur was the quote-unquote offensive coordinator in Los Angeles with the Rams, but he wasn't calling plays because McVay does, and so he left to go to Tennessee to call plays. Why does he get this job? As a first-time head coach, he's in his 30s, 39 years old, to take over the Packers job, one of the most significant jobs in all of football, maybe all of sports. The answer is everybody in the league is trying to grab a little dash of the McVay magic. If you are seen as Sean McVay's protege, boy, that's all you need these days. And let's face it, the Packers job is maybe the best job on the market. Certainly one of the top two. And so when you have Aaron Rodgers that you get to inherit, and you have the history of the Packers, and you have those fans and that city, and you have what I believe is a front office now willing to take advantage of the time they have with Aaron Rodgers, so willing to spend money and bring in talent to support him, you have a perfect storm of about to be a legend if you win a championship. You get names on streets. You get parades, and you get trophies. You get your name etched into history with all these other Packer legends. So winning a Super Bowl in Green Bay, especially with Aaron Rodgers, and knowing that you get Rodgers at this point in his career is extremely tantalizing. So Green Bay certainly had options. Apparently this was the only job or one of the only jobs that Josh McDaniels was going to be willing to leave New England for. But they choose Matt LaFleur. And I just think that it's everybody trying to just grab a pinch of the magic pixie dust that Sean McVay has had. McVay wasn't on a lot of people's radars because he was so young. He was 30 years old. But he walked into Los Angeles and made an immediate impact. He took a program, he took a franchise that was 500 or worse, seemingly every year with Jeff Fisher, and a head coach took over the reins of a quarterback that looked like a bust in Jared Goff, and Todd Gurley, who didn't seem like he was worthy of the draft selection that he was picked at, and he made them division winners last year. And this year, they're one of the best teams in football. And it has felt like, and I think understandably, that Sean McVay is on the forefront of what the NFL is about to become, taking advantage of the new rules, of where quarterbacking play is, of where the offense is, and exploiting that. And I think if you are an NFL executive or an NFL owner, this is a fork in the road moment in NFL history. Do you go old school? Smash mouth, old school defense, the old way that things used to be done? Or do you go new school? And that is offense, quarterback, air it out, spread concepts, etc. There's two things happening in football. Andy Reid's tree and the Sean McVay acolytes. And those two trees seemingly populate everywhere in football. And those are the hot places to go get your candidates. Hot places to go get your hires. So if you're an offensive coordinator or somebody on offense in Kansas City, Doug Peterson, Matt Nagy, Eric Bieniemy, go down the list, you're hot right now. And look, Peterson has paid off dividends, obviously, with winning a Super Bowl. Matt Nagy immediately seemed to push the Bears to the next level. They win the division this year. The other side is Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan, who are kind of the new blood of the NFL, looking at things in a new way offensively. And LaFleur checks that box. So what you see here is something we've talked about on the DA show before about the Packers. A quote-unquote overreaction, perhaps, or overcorrection to not having given Aaron Rodgers a ton of support up until this point in time. Of kind of assuming Rodgers bails you out, you build your roster conservatively, you don't spend a lot of money, you draft from within and develop from within. And instead, they're now saying, okay, McCarthy, Rodgers didn't work, get him out. Let's draft a whole bunch of different wide receivers. Let's develop those guys. Let's now get a head coach that vibes with Rodgers. And LaFleur is under 40, is from the Shanahan and McVay coaching tree, and is an offensive guy. Guess what? That checks all the boxes right now of hot candidate. Here's the problem. All those things sound great. Matt LaFleur oversaw one of the worst offenses in football this year in Tennessee. Is that because of his quarterback and Marcus Mariota? Is that because of his scheme? We don't know. McVay went to bat for LaFleur. And Sean McVay's, everybody's looking for the next Sean McVay. So his voice carries a lot of weight. Seems like a lot of people have a lot of good things to say about LaFleur. Man, I hope it works. What can I say? I hope it works because I love when the Packers are good. I love when Lambeau is alive. I love postseasons at Lambeau. And I love watching Aaron Rodgers in big games. The only way they're going to get back to any of those things is if this hire is right. So I hope it's right. But when I saw it, I said, okay, yeah, I get it. It's everyone's looking for the next McVay, and this guy looks like the next McVay. But maybe there isn't a next McVay. Maybe McVay is a guy into himself, and that LaFleur needs more seasoning because his offense last year stunk. Time for your sound check.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like
through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop him.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Nick Saban last night after getting trounced by Clemson.
And I don't think that, you know, one game necessarily defines who you are. And that's certainly what I'd like for our players to know. I think you learn a lot from experiences like this. We certainly didn't play very well tonight. And, you know, we had some issues.
They had a lot of issues. I think across the board, that was the worst game Alabama has ever played since Nick Saban has gotten there 12, 13 years ago. I will say the opponent has a lot to do with that. Clemson can make you look silly. Clemson has NFL talent at a ton of different positions. They've got a head coach that has been excellent. They've got big game chops now. They were not afraid of Alabama, and I think they had a very specific motivational tactic. Everybody keeps talking about how Alabama's going for history. Why isn't anybody talking about us going for history? We're undefeated, too. We ripped through our conference, too. We blew out our opponent in the conference championship game. You didn't. We blew out our semifinal opponent. You didn't. And I think going into last night, they delivered on that promise. That Dabo said, why aren't we being considered one of the greats of all time? Now we should be one of the greats of all time. They put a clown suit on Saban, on his staff, on the entire Alabama team, and Alabama is not used to rolled like that. That was as thorough a domination as you're going to find, and frankly, it wasn't just about Alabama's mistakes. Clemson would have won either way, but I think it was Clemson forcing them into a lot of mistakes because Clemson's that good. Derrick Rose on the firing of Tom Thibodeau.
Like I said, he was the only coach that believed in, like, right when I got the call, I was in Cleveland practicing at Cleveland State by myself with me and my little guy, Art. It was me and him in the gym by ourselves going up there 5 days a week. I had a kid at that time, my baby girl, and no teams wasn't looking for me at all. I was basically out the league. And even coming here, like everybody didn't know I was going to play this way. Like, he believed in me. I believed in myself. My family believed in me. And my little guy, Art, believed in me. And we got it done. And like I said, for everybody that think that I'm not going to play the same way, kill yourself, because I believe in myself.
That's a real weird way to show up. Critics, go kill yourself. I mean, that's a little aggressive, wouldn't you say? So that caught a lot of flack, obviously, as everybody's now more sensitive to depression and suicidal tendencies and things of this nature. And so, thankfully, Derrick Rose got the message and apologized for his words yesterday. But what a weird thing to say, especially considering Derrick Rose has battled his own mental health issues. Remember, he went AWOL from the New York Knicks. Nobody kind of knew why. He was in this kind of emotional roller coaster for years because of the injury. Some said because of the injuries and where his career was, because of who surrounded him within his family. I mean, Derrick Rose has always dealt with seeming depression or mental health issues or emotional ups and downs. And here he is telling people to kill themselves if they think that he won't be as good without Thibodeau. I mean, it's so tone deaf and so ridiculous. And thankfully, D. Rose apologized. But I mean, why would those words come out of your mouth? It's such a weird thing to say to people. Such a weird thing to just say in general. And finally, Andrew Bogut this morning. He's a kind sir, was on Taz and the Moose, and seemed to have a certain singing, a temporary adult contemporary karaoke machine on his mind.
Taz, Moose, once again.
Hold on. What's up? Say this,
good moment AB. To the
you
whole
name
family.
This band, AB?
That's playing right now.
Don't. Play a little louder for the kid. I know Moose can, but I'm not even going to ask Moose.
I cannot.
You can get it by now. It's called Led Zeppelin.
Ah, yes. Yes.
Throw a Sinatra.
Is this Dunk a Shame?
No. This is a great song. Mike, how are you, sir?
Dunk-a-Shane. Huge Freeze owns Dunk-a-Shane.
Donka Shane, D.A. Donka Shane.
What do you think? Does Bogus have huge freeze on his mind as he's saying Donka Shane there?
How does he not? Nobody else has mentioned Donka Shane on CBS Sports Radio in 6 years. Huge sings it 2 weeks later on another show. Bogus just happens to have it in his head. Huge is ingrained in everybody's brain.
Bogus says he wasn't specifically thinking about huge freeze.
But that means it's living in the back of his head. He wouldn't have pulled that from anything else but huge freeze.
Correct. He didn't. He's saying that that was not like a huge freeze joke. It was just the song that came off of the top of his head.
And that's why it's coming off the top of his head, because he's singing huge freeze in the shower and he doesn't even realize it.
Huge freeze has burrowed into all of our cerebellums. He has taken up residence in all of our brains. And it's a real shame that he's got a lifetime banishment now from the DA show, but those are rules. And rules are rules. You got to abide by them or we have a lawless society. We'll have the Jersey retirement ceremony for Huge Freeze coming up here the week going into the bye week of the playoffs. So in 2 weeks, we'll have his Jersey retirement ceremony. But it's going to be a sad day because that'll be the last time Huge is allowed here on the DA show in living form until he's a homonym that we can beam up on the wall. When we come back, Trevor Lawrence to the NFL draft.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.